When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, hope everyone's doing very well out there. Thank you guys so much for joining me today on the No Bad Dogs podcast with me, Tom Davis, America's Canine Educator, the podcast where we love, live, and of course work with dogs. Today, we have a online session with a individual that is dealing with their dog being extraordinarily fearful of literally everything, a bee or a fly in the room, to car doors, to the normal things of fireworks and things like that. And we walk through the process of some of the things of why you should correct, when you should correct, what collars to use, what tools to use, when to not use things. And there's a lot of like gray area talk, which is nice because it gives people a lot of different flavors on what to do, as well as introducing new people that the dog is fearful of and all that stuff. So it's a really great session, online session. And I'm excited to present it to you guys today. And I appreciate you guys listening again. And I want to thank my friends over at DogTure.com. DogTure is the e-collars that I talk about here on the podcast, as well as use on my YouTube channel. It's the only e-collar that we use currently. And I have a discount code for you guys. You guys can use this on all of your purchases on DogTure.com. You can use the discount code NBD10 to receive 10% off your entire purchase on DogTure.com. And again, we're doing giveaways on the podcast when this is posted. You guys screenshot it on your phones, share it with me on Instagram, tag me, and I will pick somebody in 24 hours after this is posted to do a giveaway of online sessions like you're hearing, or No Bad Dog merch, and so on and so forth. So anyway, here we go with the podcast, guys.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
I'm good, hanging in there in New Jersey.
Josie, cool.
Yep, one of the epicenters.
Yeah, I hear you. what's your first name?
Deanne.
Okay, cool. All right, Deanne. What do you got going on?
So I have, I rescued a dog. His name is Relish. He's 5. He's about to be 6. They said he was a dash hound mix, but I did, the DNA test. It came back like Schipperke, Pitbull, and Chihuahua. I've had him since he's 12 weeks old. They rescued him from Tennessee and they put him like on a transport tractor trailer from Tennessee all the way to Connecticut. And then I picked him up in Connecticut. So basically the issues that I'm having is he's like extremely fearful, like to the point where he'll be hiding under the bed all day. He hides under the table. I know that there are certain things that I attribute fear to when it comes to other people, because there has been 2 incidents with nipping in the past. So I know like when I'm around that I'm a contributor, but there's other times when we're just sitting in the house and noises like the refrigerator fan kicking on, the ice maker starting in the freezer, like those things will set him off to like a complete panic. So like, I just want to make the day, like I understand like, and where I live, they set fireworks off all the time. I live across the street from the lake, so you can hear like the boats and the jet skis, like that gets a little loud, and storms. Like I know those are big triggers for him, but I want to have tips for the small things like the ice maker and daily noises that he hears to try to help better his life a little bit.
Yeah, got it.
So, like I'm not sure of what I'm supposed to do. Am I supposed to let him hide in his like places that he likes and let him be comfortable? Or am I supposed to close the bedroom? Like when he's in pure panic mode, there's no, like he's in the bathtub, like burrowing in the bathtub. But like for the ice maker and stuff, it's like little shakes. So I just didn't know what I should do for those types of things.
Yeah, it's tough. When you get a dog that's that afraid of things that they shouldn't be afraid of, it's challenging and it's frustrating for yourself and the dog, of course. So, yeah, we can walk through this process and kind of go over some things that hopefully will put you into the right direction and get him more. He said his name is Relish, right?
Yep.
Cool. So with Relish, he's 5 years old. You've had him since 12 weeks, and he's afraid of everything.
Yeah. So like, this is the first dog I've ever had. So I'm, you know, kind of didn't like know what to do when I first got him. I was working from home, so I was around all the time. Then I had to go into work. Then my ex and I broke up. So there's been like not consistency with him. So he's definitely not had like a normal routine. And I work a lot. So he's always with my, like, he'll be at my house when I'm home, or he'll be with my stepdad and my mom down the road when I'm at work. But I've had, within the past year, I've had dog walkers that take him. Like, he was kind of not good with them in the beginning, but they're in the mindset, like, give me the leash and he'll be fine. And he does well with pack walks with them. They take him to places to build his confidence, like Home Depot and their that's backyard good. And let him run around their dog. So he does well with them in that sense.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. So right now you're really working on how to gain confidence with random things throughout the day in general.
I think I'm seeing it more now since I've been home for 3 months, and I guess I just didn't realize it was like as bad as it is. So I just didn't, like, I've been watching your videos. I found you on YouTube within the past couple of weeks. So I've been working on commands like place and stuff like that. So I didn't know if, like, when he gets in these nervous modes, am I supposed to, like, try to get him into, like, let him know that the place is the comfort zone and get him, you know, to feel comfortable. I'm just not kind of sure what to do.
Sure. Yeah, no, I understand. So right now, what are you doing when he reacts? So say, let's say the refrigerator goes off, or the ice maker, and he jumps and gets afraid. What are you doing?
I just let him go into his safe. I've been doing a mixture of letting him go to his safe space under the, like, the bed where it is, or there's been times where I've shut the door so he can't get in there, and he'll just stand and stare at it for a while, and then eventually he'll give up and then just lay down in the living room.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to start working around some of these things. And like I said, when you're dealing with, like, very weird type of tendencies like this, you know, there are some things you can do, and there's things you can't control, because, like you said, like, if the, like, for an example, the other night, same thing happened to me. My neighbors lit off a firework and it, like, went right over my house, and I jumped out of bed. My dogs jumped into bed. You know, they were, one of my dogs is really afraid of these things. And so it those things, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, my other neighbor yelled at my neighbor. I don't think that's ever going to happen again. But the point is like, there are certain things, you know, ambulances, fire trucks, neighbors, fireworks, you know, neighboring neighborhoods with big fireworks, things you can't control. And I think people deal with this on a regular basis, and it is tough. So what I would do is a couple of different things. Is first thing is do the best you can to create more confidence in the dog in general. So just getting the dog to be a little bit more confident in general would be the first step. And ways of doing that is obedience. Even if your dog already knows obedience, just doing things together. Just like with, you know, with confidence in humans, it's similar. Where if you as your person, like in your mind, if you said, hey, I'm going to do this today, no matter what it is, and you don't do it, that's a really quick way to ruin self-confidence. Judging by all the ringleaders of the world of how to build confidence and really build self-esteem. And I'm really big on just behavior in general, both with human and dogs. And I study them both, or I try to study them both as much as I can. And I know that that's like one of the big things with people is just doing things and then following through. So having an exercise with your dog to do new things. So if your dog is great at obedience or not, you should start that process of teaching your dog new things. So, okay, Relish, place, good place, down, good down, stay, good stay. So over time, you'll develop a better relationship and hopefully build more confidence in Relish at that level. It seems those two do correlate. It might not seem it like exteriorly of like how would doing basic obedience with my dogs help my dog become more confident? And it's really about the dog winning certain things. You know, when we talk about confidence in not only working dogs, police dogs, government, military dogs, but in pet dogs too, of like, if they win something, they gain confidence to where they're going to do it again. And And so it's the same thing with pet dogs and just basic obedience. And then the other thing is if they don't know some basic obedience like play, sit, down, stay, heel, break, whatever, enter, you know, what X, Y, and Z, it doesn't really matter what it is. That's another good way to start building confidence in a dog. And it kind of correlates with people too, where you say, hey, do this. And then they do it and you go, yay, good job. And they go, oh, that felt good. Like that was nice. I mean, just getting rewarded for anything is nice, I think, on both ends of the spectrum of people and dogs. So that's one thing I would start doing. Do you have a lot of obedience with your dog yet? Or not really?
Like he's been to, puppy preschool, obedience one, once obedience one again, and obedience two. Mm-hmm. I've done some private sessions, but there's times where he just like completely shuts down. Like you can tell, like not there, like we'll just like he'll just stare off, like no, won't give me eye contact at all, will turn his head and stuff like that. So, and when I bring him to these classes, he'll just like hide under the chair.
Right.
And
so that's what I mean. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because that's the other thing I was going to say is you will see a direct correlation with obedience and a dog. So, 'cause there is a difference, and this is the fine line we're going to be talking about, is a dog being like, nah, I'm kind of freaked out by that, versus a dog like, you know, really afraid in the bathtub, scraping to get deeper, to get away from, you know, the noises. So that's like,
It's a, like a fly in here will set him off. Like if he sees a fly in the house, it's mm-hmm. like full blown shakes.
Yeah. So like those types of things, like I said, it's hard to like understand, and you can't correct it because it doesn't make any sense to do that. You don't really want to say, hey, buddy, it's okay, because then you're kind of like layering over confusion of verbalization of you talking to him, which will make him more stressed potentially. So those types of things we'll talk about further on. But developing a more confident dog from the base is what I want to talk about. And you kind of just mentioned that, where you have a dog that even in obedience class is like not necessarily terrified of things, but is like, I don't want to do it. Like that's a confidence thing. It's just like with kids, you know, when you bring them to first grade, kindergarten, whatever, anything. I mean, the clown, you know, whatever, doesn't matter. You know, Mickey Mouse, whatever, you name it. They're like, nah, I don't want to. That kind of freaks me out. So there's certain things that, you know, your dog should be, I guess, respectfully afraid of. Like fireworks, that's freaky.
Yeah.
Flies, not so much. So going back to the obedience portion of it, just make sure that you're pushing your dog through these certain boundaries to create that confidence. Because right now, if they're you don't want to enable your dog to escape every single uncomfortable thing that comes about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I'm fine. Like I don't want to say I'm fine with, but I accept, and I know that other people have problems with storms and fireworks and things. It's just like an ice mate. There's noises that I can't even hear, and he just like sets off. And I don't want to coddle it, but I don't want his life to constantly be hiding under a bed. So it's just, I just struggle with the fine line of what to do.
Yeah, no doubt. I understand completely. And I get that. But like I said, that's where you want to start, is just developing, so let's just take away all the freaky stuff that your dog is afraid of. Chances are, if your dog wasn't terrified of these weird things, he would still be very insecure. He may just wear it in a different outlet. You may be calling me and saying, hey, my dog won't walk on a leash, or my dog won't, you know, whatever. But the point is across the board, your dog needs more exposure, desensitization, confidence building, and more things to do. So the more things that your dog have to do, like in their category, their catalog, if you will, of things to do, brain games, again, like heel, sit, down, like all that obedience stuff isn't just to coexist with your dog better and more, happier or whatever, but it's also to just get your dog to do work, to do something.
Yeah, to occupy his mind and mm-hmm. to make him think. Because you could tell, like, when I have been doing the place and stuff with him, you can tell he'll get exhausted from, like, trying to figure out what it is I'm asking to do.
That's what I mean. And sometimes, too, just like with people, and again, it's hard to say, but generally speaking, historically speaking, if you allow your dog to, like, kind of think about things all day. You know, you create that anxiety of like, what if, what if, what if, what's that, what's this, what are we doing, what's that smell, what's that sound, what's that noise? Then the dog will self-isolate and kind of self-destruct every day. And so the more things you can get him to do throughout the day, not only exercising and demonstrating the things that he already knows, his pre-existing behaviors and obedience, but as well as teaching him new things that will really, really help his confidence, because it'll give you something to do with him mentally. Same thing with your dog walker, your stepdad and your mom, and just say, hey, do these things throughout the day. And they may find it really fun to do, and just getting him to do something, because at the end of the day, like, I know that if I am on calls and emails and filming and running and exercising, I sleep better and I'm calmer at night than if I'm, you know, drinking coffee and not doing much throughout the day. And I think that you can, you can wear that however you want. But the point is the more we have to do and the more stuff we do, the more unwound we become, especially with animals. And it's, again, I correlate a lot of things to child psychology, because it really makes sense for us to think about it that way in a human form. And it's the same thing with kids. Like, you bring them to, you know, the park, and they run around for 3 hours with their friends in the hot sun, they're going to sleep forever. You know, they get tired. You know, it's kind of the same thing with dogs. It's just giving them something to do, giving them activities both mentally and physically is big. So that's the other thing I want to talk about too. So is the physical activity. So with the mental stuff, that's something that you have to really audit yourself of. What does my dog know well, and what are they not, and what can you teach him? So you can kind of figure that out on your own. But I would do at least 5 or 6 basics and exercise it throughout the day. Give him a job, give him something to do, would help a lot. Especially if you know, one of the things that we're going to be talking about is like anticipatory type of meltdowns, like 4th of July, Memorial Day, you know, things like that we'll talk about in the future. But anyway, the point is do those things. But the other big thing with that, in correlation or in conjunction with, would be your physical exercise. So lots of walks, running around as much as you can. You know, it's a smaller dog, so you don't need as much exertion as like a bigger, you know, great, you know, not Great Dane, but like a Vizsla or a Weimanheimer or a Lab that maybe needs like 2 hours of straight constant running. Where if you have like a smaller dog or a medium sized dog, you can get away with, you know, really running them in the yard or on a walk, or running yourself with the dog, or whatever your cup of tea is, if you will. But that physical exercise is really, really big for all dogs, not just dogs with anxiety or fear-based behavior, but every single dog needs that physical, even if it's always like breed dependent. And a lot of times it's environmental dependent too. Like today here is probably 100 degrees. My St. Bernard is going to go out to go bathroom and back in, right? He's not going to go for a walk today, or tonight, or even this morning, because it's just too hot. And they don't want to either. And then, you know, my Dutch Shepherd, forget about it. I mean, she's ready to play all day, running around. So, how much physical exercise is he getting currently?
So now that I've been home, like, I can take him on a 3-mile trail every day. That's right behind my house. But that's another, so another question that I wanted to ask is about the collar. And then on that trail that we go to, and that's my mom's house is right down the road from mine. There's a shooting range somewhere around here. So Relish can hear those gunshots. And that's like another thing that sets him off. So we'll go on to the trail. He'll hear the gunshots, start to like buck and back up. I've been walking him on the martingale collar. I can do a pop, pop, and then he'll start to continue to walk with me. Like, and then I'll say, good boy, good boy, because then he'll start to come. But like, there's other times where it's like full shutdown, like, that's it, I'm going the other way. So I just don't know how much do I push the limit with him.
Right. It's a great, like, yeah. Great question. Super. Definitely. I understand. So, again, like there's a gray area, there's a fine line between like, hey, you know, like, let's do this versus like, okay, I think you're, you know, actively like shutting down. So, What I would do is, again, like, try to desensitize him to these things and getting him exposed to these things the best you can. And like I said, there are certain things in a dog's life that no matter how much exposure, desensitization, positive reinforcement, whatever that you throw at them, they're just never going to be okay with it. And, you know, gunshots and things, basically big booms in the sky or out of nowhere, dogs don't like fireworks.
And like, I think that's what he hears with the wave runners. Like when a wave runner hits like the,
yeah,
the out the on the lake, he can hear that. Or if there's a hammer, somebody's hammering, that sets him off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like those types of things.
Yep.
But the question with the, so I had taken him, one of the trainers that we had gone to, he does military dog training, and he's the one that recommended the martingale for him and taught me the pop pop.
Mm-hmm.
He was not against slip collars because he was recommending, prong collars, because he was recommending that towards other people to use for their dogs, but said for me not to use it on him. I don't know if it's because he's so anxious. So I wanted to get your opinion on that. And I see your video on slip collars. Relish will pull, like on the martingale, sometimes the pop pop works. I know that you're saying it when you do your slip collar, that applies more pressure and gets their attention more so. So I wanted to see if that would be something instead of a prong that I could use to when he still defies the martingale.
Yeah, I would agree probably that the martingale is kind of like a hybrid between the slip and the prong. It applies pressure for sure. If a dog, you know, pulls and tries to get, so if you're walking with Relish and he tries to pull back or try to escape, you still have pressure on him. So you're still able to give him some sort of physical pressure without him completely backing out of the collar and or without him, you know, trying to run away and you not put any pressure on him. Because if he had a regular flat collar on, and even if he couldn't get out of that flat collar, he could still try to like back out of that collar or just try to run away and there was no pressure. So I would agree that the martingale is probably a good safe bet. It's fair. It applies pressure without too much correction, because what you don't want to do is get a dog. And again, it's kind of like that gray area too, because I've taken dogs that I can kind of read and I'm like, are you being a brat or are you really nervous? You know, and for dogs who are just like, nah, I'm not doing it. You know, prong collar is really nice to just be like, okay, well, this is what we're doing. And they accept that pressure and they respect it. And then we're off to the races. But with him, it sounds like he's actually like really, really terrified. So I would agree with the martingale collar and using that for your pressure system and using that on your walks is a good idea. Yeah.
And that one, do you, because when on your videos, the slip collar that goes like higher up behind the ears, is the martingale supposed to be that high, like fitted that high?
Not really, because the martingale's mostly a flat collar that you can add pressure to it. So not necessarily. You don't want your flat collar or your every, because the martingale should really be like your everyday collar. It's like the safest collar to use. So you really don't want that like, you know, tight and high all the time, like a training collar. But definitely tight enough to where it's not, you know, it's effective and he's still getting pressure.
So there's times where he does listen to the martingale collar, like on the trail that's behind my house, there's nobody really on it. It's like meant to go to like a cell tower. So it's literally just me and him and the gunshot. So that's kind of like my go-to spot. Cause he also sometimes will be reactive when other dogs are walking towards us on the leash, or like, I just went walking with my mom this weekend for like this 5 mile thing. And he pulled the whole way. Like my hands were literally just like almost raw, cause he's 25 pounds, but he's taken me down before.
Yeah. And I think, and again, that kind of goes back to you being a leader and creating like a balanced, relationship with him, as well as building confidence, because, you know, and again, it's like that gray area, and that's where it's hard and difficult sometimes, but I would be really working on, you can kind of toggle between two different collars. You can use the prong collar when you're out and you're working on basic obedience in an environment where you're not going to have like super, super freak out stuff, where it's fair. So you can teach him that like, hey dude, you're not in charge and I am, because I find that a lot of dogs who are like Relish and what you're talking about, the majority of them really suffer from lack of leadership from somebody. So either it's created from lack of leadership and or it's worsened from the lack of leadership. So anyway, the point is I would definitely suggest you starting to really take control and take over as much as you can to make sure that you're actually like supplying him with what he needs as far as you know, leadership, guidance, all that, you know, all that stuff. But that's something that I would suggest highly, getting out and teaching him heel, teaching him, you know, all your basics, but reinforcing it, because you don't want him to feel like he can escape at any time, you know, when he feels a little nervous.
But because it's like, it's not enjoyable. It's like that when he gets like that, it's just like, I, you know. And those slip collar, the slip ones that you wear high, would that be something that I could do at first instead of a prong?
Yep, absolutely.
And you can have a backup to that. I watched your video. I ordered the paracord because I'm going to make it when it comes. And can you back that up like you do a slip collar in case it breaks that then he's on the martingale?
Yep, absolutely. Any type of collar you can back up with a safety clip.
Okay.
Yep. So that, you know,
I just wanted to get your advice. I didn't know, because the guy, it wasn't like he was against slip collar, I mean prong ones, because he was recommending them to other people in the class, but he just said not on him. So then I just wasn't sure. Yeah. So I just wanted to get.
Yeah. And I would agree to the majority of that, you know, especially if he gets into those situations where he's trying to run away and you correct him for it, and then it kind of puts him in a freak out mode. And that happens. And that's the thing with like anything that you do, you know, with anything, there's always that potential gray area of like, oh, well, yeah, you definitely, I mean, use it for 85% of the stuff. It's going to help you a lot. But like this percentage of the stuff, like don't use it for that. And I would say generally speaking for you, like getting him into a training scenario, maybe in a non-distracted area, and using the prong collar to really reestablish like a lot of situational things with him, environmental things, get him more confident. I remember this one time I had this little Yorkshire Terrier come in. She was older. She was like 8 or 10. She was abused. She basically like had all of her teeth ripped out because they bred her and they didn't want her to bite. So just, you know, really crummy people in this company, or I'm sorry, this couple adopted her, and she was really sweet to one owner, but not she was really sweet to the female, but not the male. And long story short, this dog was very fearful, probably abused. Well, definitely abused, neglected, just, you know, not a good life. And I remember I was working with this dog and it was so tough to break through. And I put this little prong collar on. It's on my YouTube channel. It's dated a couple years ago. But I put the prong collar on the dog and she got that correction once, and she turned around and she walked up to me and laid in my lap and slept. It was a very monumental part of my career. It was awesome to have it on film. It was awesome as an advocate for prong collars and tools in general, that they can be administrated in the right way. And when they do, it's game changing for not only the owners, but the dogs as well. So anyway, I would agree that most cases with Relish, I would be using some sort of martingale or slip collar that doesn't have too much of, because really what it comes down to is some dogs are super sensitive and others aren't. So you may get a dog, you correct them on the prong and they're like, what? You know, and then you may get a prong on another dog and they're very, just like with people. I mean, yeah. I know people that can, you know, it's all about thresholds, and every single dog, just like every person's threshold, is different on many different levels. How much you can eat, how much you can drink, how much you can stand getting yelled at, how much you can run, how much, I mean, there's so, every single person has their own thresholds, and dogs are the same way. So the sensitivity level, for the majority of times with tools, that's what it comes down to, is what you may or may not use. It's not applicable to e-collars, because e-collars is a kind of like a one-size-fits-all. You can find your dog's level. But like with prong collars and stuff, sometimes dogs are a little bit too sensitive in certain situations. So anyway, so you have to like navigate through those paths, and you know, that's why tools in general are best used and, applied from a professional and by a professional and introduced from and with a professional. And that's, I think, the biggest hurdle in the dog training industry now, with just balanced dog training and tools in general, is finding that neutral ground of like, okay, let's allow tools, but you have to make sure that you're buying these tools, you know, just like anything else. There's a lot of, you can't even buy certain like workout pills without getting it from a dealer, because it's potentially like, oh, you could do it wrong, you know, type thing. So anyway, I would agree. I would get yourself a little prong collar, martingale collar, or a slip collar, or all three, and see what fits you best.
Okay. And this, if I type in slip collar for search, like on a search, that I find is literally just like, it kind of is just like a rope. It's not like the ones that you make on your show. Do you get what I'm saying? It's like a rope that just like wraps around his neck. It just looks like a coiled leash.
Yeah, those are good as long as you can get a thin one. So it's like a kennel leash. That's good. It's basically like a slip collar, but it's considered like a, hold on. I can actually go. I might have one. Let me go see if I have one really quick. I can show you the difference.
Okay.
Yeah. This would be like your slip. So a slip, like leash, is essentially a leash that you hold in your hand that goes all the way down to the dog and has a little slip on it. So it's kind of,
yep,
it's kind of like a leash and the slip collar combined. And then the collar, which is this, which is just your normal,
yeah,
leash connected to the slip. As long as you get a thin, like, slip leash, it's
okay,
good. If you, the bigger and bulkier you get, the less control you have. So, and the real difference is just, you know, the slip collar is going to be a little bit more defined because it's right where you need to be. It's just preference, really, I think. But just make,
okay,
sure that,
okay,
yeah, just make sure the leash that you get is not like a big giant rope, because that kind of,
okay,
is hard to handle, especially with like a potential smaller dog. So anyway.
So that, and it's like, he's really not consistent. Like if I'm walking with him around the neighborhood, like there's this one house where the dogs are on an electric fence. So they'll come running at him. He doesn't even react to that at all. But then if we're just like walking on a trail and somebody's like walking towards us, it's like full blown, like, rah, like, so I, you know,
yeah,
I've been trying to, when we're on a trail and I see somebody else coming, I'll step to the side, ask him to sit. If he doesn't sit, then I'll do the pop. If he doesn't respond to the pop, then I'll touch his butt and he'll sit.
Right.
So that's what I've been like trying to do.
Yeah. And
I don't know if
and
that's
again,
correct.
Yeah, and like that situation, that would be nice to have something that is a little bit more meaningful to your dog. And again, you're kind of like walking that rope of, you know, my dog is actually fearful. I have to be careful how much I punish them. But I think the majority of times with your dog, you're probably dealing with more like, nah, I don't want to.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm a little bit insecure about this. I don't want to. And that will, you know, so like those types of things, again, like if you look at your relationship with your dog, If you give an opportunity for your dog to take control and disobey and say, I'm not doing it, and get away with it, then that's what's creating a lot of the anxiety or stress and fearfulness of your dog. Because he's in his head, he's like, well, the person in charge really isn't in charge, which makes him,
yep,
nervous. And then when things happen, it's kind of like when you're home alone with your siblings and, you know, you feel like you're under attack. You're just helpless. You're like, well, they're not going to do anything. It's not mom and dad, you know. You just have that mentality of like, you know, abandon all ships, or everybody fend for themselves. And it sounds to me that Relish isn't looking at you enough for guidance because of those little situations. So
yep.
I would be going out and actively working on little tiny exercises and demonstrating you as a leader by doing basic obedience and following through with, no, you have to do this when I say it. And really just like restructuring your entire relationship with your dog on the leash to,
yep,
to help with that.
Yep. And he won't take treats. He's like not food motivated, except like in the morning when it's just, when he first wakes up before I feed him breakfast, then now I've been practicing the place. He'll do it. I'll do it for like 10 minutes. I'll do place and then I'll hide in another room and I'll say come. And then I'm like working the place and come those commands,
yeah,
with him since watching your videos, and little things like I've never done before, like because I've never had a dog. I didn't know. I won't let him walk in the door first now since watching your videos. So I'm like trying to work on those things. When we come back in from the walk, I want you to sit so I can take the leash off, like those types of things. So I'm trying to do those. So hopefully that will help with the confidence building.
Yeah, absolutely.
So another big issue. So we had two nipping incidents. The first one, he's always been fine with other people previously. When my ex and I broke up and I moved back home, it was like Relish is like, I'm the leader now. And like, mm-hmm. you know, he doesn't listen to me, like exactly like you're saying. So I was at my shore house. My girlfriend was there. She had her dog in the house. And my guy friend was going in to use the bathroom. And my girlfriend's like, oh, careful. My dog doesn't like men. So the guy opened the door to go to the bathroom. And my dog, Relish, jumped up and nipped him on the leg, like on the thigh. So I didn't even know Relish, you know, was nervous or anything. So once that happened, we took him to the military training. And my biggest thing is I don't want to set him up for failure. So if I ever had somebody come in the house, like I have him on the leash, but he'll be like full blown death bark, but the tail wagging at the same time. And it's just like, he's so confused. He doesn't know what to do. If he's inside and somebody's outside that he sees, he's jumping up like a jumping bean up the sliding door, like going crazy. So it's like, what do I, like, I know he senses me that I'm nervous because he's nipped two people. The other time he was fine with the person. The person went to go move to pet another dog and he moved his arm quick and Relish nipped his arm. And I had him on the leash then, but he was like being fine. So I had the leash right there. And then as soon as the guy moved, Relish was like, nope, and like nipped him. But now he's fine with that guy. He could walk right into my house and Relish will run right up to him. So it's like, I don't want to set him up to failure. I don't feel like I want to ask too much of him, but it's just like, I'm a single person. What do I, if I do, if I get to the point where I meet somebody and I want to introduce Relish to him, like I can't live, like what is the best recommendation for that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, generally speaking, judging by what I'm hearing is he's not like an aggressive dog that is out for blood and trying to hurt people and, you know, has a bad demeanor. He's nervous. He's fearful. And, you know,
yeah, he does like forward. He'll be like forward, back, mm-hmm. Like he'll like go forward, back. And like, it's like, he's just uneasy. And I'm sure I'm holding my breath the whole time because I'm embarrassed. I don't know what to do. I'm nervous. I don't want him to fail.
Right.
All that.
Yeah. So again, you know, it's really about you understanding the whole thing, you know, the whole in-depth thing of what we're dealing with, the big picture here, and your obedience. So making sure that you're, you know, you have any animal, you know, for the majority of animals, we'll say. I mean, majority of animals, not any, but majority of animals, if they feel threatened or pushed into a corner, they react the only way that they know how. It's very instinctual, just like with us. You know, if somebody was like tackling us and trying to choke us or something, we're going to fight back. It's just very instinct. So same thing with dogs for sure. And so you have to really do your part to make sure that you're setting him up for as much success as you can. Sometimes, you know, it's out of your control where you're like, okay, I never thought that would happen, you know, whatever. But moving forward, you really just have to make sure that you are being extra careful. You know, it's just like I tell my clients with dogs who are aggressive and don't like other dogs, there's a really good chance that they're never going to just like dogs. It's just, it's okay. I mean, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
You just have to realize your expectations of certain things to make yourself more successful, I think. So just having, when you have people over, when you have people around, knowing that, first of all, your obedience has to be really good, you know, in order for him to be really successful with you, that's big. So telling him, you know, again, doing his place, doing his sit, doing his stay, doing all that stuff and making sure that like he understands those things, as well as making sure that when you're working with him, he understands all these things, but at the same time, you're also using those things in reality. So if you have friends and family over, you're working on this obedience and then also just making sure like, okay, you're not going to be paying attention. These people don't really care about my, you know, your dog's behavior. So maybe keeping your dog in a separated area and just telling people like, hey, my dog's nervous. Please don't go in here. If you need something, let me know. Like take an extra precaution to make sure. Cause a lot of people do, you know, they feel very stressed out and it's like, I want to remove all the stress from that, option by just, you know, having your obedience be good. And then also just telling people like, hey, don't do this with my dog or whatever, or, you know, just keeping him safe.
I won't even bring him around. Like now it's like, and it's always been like this since the nipping incident, if I'm having people over, I bring him to my mom's house. Like I don't even have him here, but it's like, because it's like, eventually say if I do meet somebody and like, you want to have somebody over, like, do I introduce him to him outside of the house, go on a walk or, you know, like.
Yeah. So yeah, I was going to get to that. So when you're introducing your, you know, potentially fearful or reactive dog or whatever you want to look at it. I always tell people like, you know, text that person, call that person. Yeah, they can park in your driveway. Just say, hey, just walk up the road or whatever. And you just meet on neutral ground. So don't meet in the front yard. Don't meet in the driveway. Don't meet in the house, backyard, side yard, whatever. Just meet on neutral grounds and just go for a walk together. And once your dog realizes that that person is going to be with you for the next 10 to 15 to hour to 2 hour, days, months, years, then that's all you really need to do. And now moving forward from that, as soon as you transition to inside, you have to be conscious about certain things. You know, for the majority of people, you know, with dealing with situations like this, you know, you could be working with resource guardians, watching out for bones, dishes, food, treats, whatever. But in your case, it's just like, hey, when we go inside, don't look at him, don't talk to him, don't do anything to him. And you should be fine. But you know, that's guest management. That's another side to it, is training the people is sometimes a little bit harder. And I think, you know, being conscious of a couple of different triggers, which would be if you guys are sitting down, relaxing, eating dinner, having coffee, on the couch, whatever, it doesn't matter. If you're doing something and then you change, right? Because the dog says, okay, I'm okay with this picture because you walked me into this picture, which means you had him on the leash, you sat down with him, you dropped the leash, and then, you know, whatever, X, Y, or Z gets up, and that changes the picture. So you have to, some people, I probably get that every day. People are like, doesn't make any sense. All of a sudden, you know, my friend got up and boom, my dog, it's like, well, it's not just all of a sudden, it's your dog was okay with the circumstances, and that person that they're unsure of or afraid of changed those circumstances. And so that's what triggers dogs like that. So just make sure that, you know, and you don't have to do that forever. You just have to do it for a little bit of time until that dog gets used to it, used to that person. And that's it.
Yep.
I don't think you're going to have too hard of a time doing it. But again, you know, if that individual says, oh, well, don't worry, I've watched 3 seasons of The Dog Whisperer, I know what
I'm
doing.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't listen, no.
You know, it's like, okay. And then they go and they rub his face and they get bit, and it's like, okay, you know. So anyway, so you just have to, you know, walk into it very calmly and just set your dog up for success. And now if you say, okay, well, I don't really feel like babysitting right now, then again, place, downstay, making sure he's crate trained, where he's going to go in his crate and hang out and lay down and sleep, chew on a bone, and he's safe, you're safe. X-pen, making an area in the house where you can put him in and he can hang out and be by himself. And he's probably more confident by himself and less stressed by himself too. Those types of things I would be doing as well.
Yeah. Like he doesn't like when he's in those freak out modes, he doesn't really want to be coddled by me. Like he just is like, peace out, see you later. Like sometimes I'll go in the bathroom and check on him, but it's like, he's always in the bathroom where there's no windows. We have the noisemaker on, you know, the fan. I do the thunder jacket with the spray. I had bought CBD oil to try once, but like he won't eat that. So I might try like a treat. I know that you've talked about that on your channel. Do you recommend something like that with him?
Yeah, I just bought some today. Actually, it came in. CBDMD has a good line, and I have a discount code K910. So K9E10 gives you 10% off. And, you know, that's not really a plug. That's just like, their product is good. They have a vast array of product. I use their product. And they have chewable. So my older dog, she doesn't like crunchy treats because she's older and her teeth, you know, she's like 16. So soft food, she eats raw anyway, but soft food is best for her. So they have tinctures, chewables, soft chews, hard chews, CBD for joints, CBD for stress, CBD, you know, it's, you know, they make a pretty good product. And so, it's a little bit expensive, but hey, I mean, it's totally worth it. You know, for me, I have, you know, my St. Bernard is now 11, you know, 11-year-old, 150-pound dog. You know, he's stiff and sore, and so using CBD for him, it's really great. So anyway, yeah, I would recommend that, getting a good dosage and using that. I mean, it's definitely not. See, people think, like, when we talk about CBD, it's like, oh, that's not going to solve it. It's like, no, it's not going to solve it, but it's definitely going to help take the edge
off. It's another tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, I give my dog CBD every day, and that works.
Yeah, because at one point I had talked to the vet and we were going to have him on like doggy Prozac or whatever. And then I just didn't feel comfortable because that, you know, they say it affects the liver and then all the blood work you have to get done. And I just didn't, he just, the couple times that he was on it, I just felt like he was like out of it even more so than he normally is. Mm-hmm. And he's so nervous that when we first got him, like for the first few years, I feed him chicken and rice daily because he was so nervous that he was like constantly having diarrhea, like just so many issues because he just gets so worked up all the time. He was on Tylen powder, probiotics, like prescription dog food. And I was like, all right, so now we're just going to do the chicken and rice and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Yeah. So I would definitely recommend, doing like the CBD and then, you know, the exercise and all that stuff. But I think the reality is like I said, excuse me, you're not going to be able to control like every variable in the world. It's just unrealistic. It's not fair to even think about that. But what I would be doing is a lot of desensitization to certain things. So getting out and just kind of pushing him through in small increments to get him like exposed to these things, putting him into a sit at a traffic light where there's things going on and just breathe, you know, kind of like taking that stuff in and acknowledging these things around him and just kind of getting him over his fears the best you can. And expose him as much as you can. And that's what I would do, is continue to like push the envelope to get him more successful by exposure, you know, within reason and fairness. And then the other thing is just, again, you know, the physical exercise and the mental exercise with the obedience and doing all of those things. And then one thing that we haven't talked about is with you. So making sure that you're acting, you know, the right way when this stuff happens too. Like when you talked about like your obedience, school type thing where he would shut down, like those are situations you really have to take advantage of to make things better by just kind of pushing him forward. So when you get a dog that shuts down on the leash and lays down and just won't move, your opportunity to just kind of push that dog along and say, nope, this is what we're doing. Like, let's go. And just getting over that hurdle so he can't opt out whenever he feels like he doesn't want to do anything. So what not to do is just sit there and have a conversation. And what's wrong, buddy? It's okay. It's just your favorite training camp. Like, blah, 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 blah. Like, don't do any of that stuff. It's not a good idea.
Another question I have, if like, say there's a noise that I know he normally would go into panic mode about and say he doesn't react, do you reward that or do you not acknowledge that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that's discretionary. If you feel like he's actively working on it, where he's like, I heard that, but I'm not reacting, you could say, hey, good, you know, good, leave it or something like that. Sure. But like, if he just doesn't react, like for me, I just try to like, you know, I'm very, I don't know. It's on the fly for me. It's like, I've been in some situations, you know, like everyone else has in their life, and you make it however you want it to be. You know, if you're just like, yep, no big deal. It's not a big deal, you know, but if you're like, whoa, what? And you know, that's one of my, it's one of my abilities in life is to like, you know, not make big deals, big deals. I think that has to do with a lot with my, you know, just, you know, sidetrack of just networking and just, you know, making things happen and just, you know, just be like, yeah, whatever, no problem. Like moving forward. Like, I think it's part of being a confident individual where, and it's the same, I'm not talking about me. I'm just talking about like dogs and you as a leader in general. Like you have to be confident of like, if something happens and you react, you're going to freak out the things that you're in charge of. I call it the flight attendant thing.
Yeah.
You know, like if you hear something like on a plane, because people kind of are nervous about flying and, you know, and you see the flight attendants like, and they're just handing out drinks and peanuts and you're like, oh, no big deal. But as soon as they start running around and getting nervous, you're like, oh, crap. So similar stuff. So making sure that you.
Okay.
So I guess I hope that that answers your question, but be confident.
Yeah.
Something flies at you unpredictable and you react like no big deal, then it's not a big deal. It's just like leadership / parenting 101. If you're in charge of something and you want to project a certain vibe, then you have to act a certain way. And a lot of that has to do with just ignoring little things that don't matter. And that's, you know,
right.
That's kind of, I think, advice to everyone about, you know, just like little things, not making
life.
Yeah. The more you make little things big deals, it's, you know, it could be kind of daunting because everything is going to be a task.
Yep.
So anyway.
And then the one, the other, he's very, what's the word? Like where he goes after squirrels and chipmunks a lot. So like in the back, in my mom's backyard, it's not fenced in. So we have them like on a 30-foot or 20-foot lead type thing. So you can at least run around a little bit. But like there's all these rocks and chipmunks and stuff. Is that when I should be trying to work on like leave it?
Yeah.
And?
I yes and no. I mean, I would say like I want him and, you know, I would want him to be like exposed to those things. I think that that'll bring confidence out in a dog too, where they kind of like, you know, the old saying of like chasing the rabbit down the hole is like letting him do that so he can kind of realize that, you know. So I don't know. I'd be careful about that. I feel like if you feel like he's being like playful and kind of primalistic and like, hey, there's something I got to go chase, I would almost encourage that to like get him out of his shell a little bit.
Okay. I think, yeah, my biggest thing is just like, I don't about like those little things and should I not let him go in the hiding areas and stuff like that? Cause I've seen, I know I can watch your videos in terms of like for me to teach commands and what you recommend to do that. So my biggest questions are really on what your professional opinion is about the collar with him, knowing how anxious and nervous he is. And then if I should not be letting him go into the hiding places for these normal everyday things like flies and stuff like
yeah,
that.
I would, you know, again, it's tough because it's like, if he's afraid and he runs away, it's like, it's going to be a full-time job for you to like stop him from doing those things. But, you know, like putting him on the leash more to like handle these things like a fly or, you know, whatever, like, you know, the computer buzzing, like I would be putting him on the leash and like making him sit through these things. So
I have like the 30 when we were trying to teach recall, I have like that soft 30 foot leash and I'll leave that on him because my house is like 800 square feet, one level. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave that on him. I'll shut the door so he can't go in. And then like when he tries to go over, I've been pulling the long leash and trying to say place to get him to go on place to relax.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's fine. That's fine. Yeah.
Okay. I think those were like my entire page full of typed up notes over here.
Cool. Very good. Well, I would say just in general, just try to build his overall confidence through relationship building stuff, obedient stuff on the leash. And continue to work at it. And then the things you can't control, just kind of walk right through it and try not to make it a big deal the best you can and help, you know, hold his hand, if you will, through those processes and just like, you know, help him become more confident.
Yep. I'll be having the dog walkers. I was kind of waiting for everything to kind of blow over around here to sure. bring them back in. But it definitely helps because it's not he's fine when like with my friend's dog, but like I haven't really exposed him to too many dogs because to be able to even get him into puppy preschool and stuff, you have to pass all these tests. Mm-hmm. And then he's with me when he tries to do that, so then he goes berserk, so because I know I'm part of the problem or most of the problem. So it's just, you know, trying to find workarounds but to still get him what he needs is the goal.
Yeah, that, you know, that's just life as it is now. And I think you just have to like dive right into it and continue to work hard and get better at it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your videos. I'm glad that I found you in my like sleepless nights of dog searching on YouTube.
Well, thank you for watching. I appreciate that very much.
No problem.
That's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope that this podcast was informative for you guys. I know that it was a good session talking about fear-based stuff and how to approach it, because sometimes it gets sticky. So I hope this gave you some ideas, some new ideas, some creative ideas to do things differently, hopefully. If you guys haven't yet, don't forget, leave a review in the review section below on the podcasting. We are growing and we are climbing the charts in the United States, in the UK, and Canada. It would mean the world to me if you guys would do that. As well, of course, if you guys want to enter to win some free No Bad Dog swag, take a screenshot of this, share it on your Instagram, and tag me. I'll repost you and automatically enter you to win some free stuff. Thank you, guys. I'll talk to you next time. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.